Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold, who is in game mode. Jeff, where are you? What are you up to, mate?
We're in Ottawa, the nation's capital. We play our first preseason game tonight against Ottawa, who's the defending Grey Cup champions. So it's going to be an interesting night. We got a bunch of young kids that'll be their first experience playing as a pro football player. I'll tell you something, Neil. That's a special thing when you see them go out on the field and that, you know, their dream since they were little boys was to be professional football players, and tonight that's going to become a reality.
You're going to get lots of those teaching moments, Jeff.
I got to keep that in mind because I know there's going to be some. We'll have some moments tonight where you're just going to shake your head and go, "Are you kidding? Did that really happen?"
All right, so we are going to let Jeff get through this podcast, then get prepared for tonight's game for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. We are going to talk a little bit of NFL news. We've got an interview coming up with former NFL offensive lineman Ross Tucker to get his take on what's been happening around the NFL the last few weeks. Our state of the franchise will focus on the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers. We're saving three teams to finish off the 32 next week, and we'll take your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, you just talked about dreams and how people are starting their pro football dreams. And I want to start with this story, which won't have made huge headlines in the United States, but the Buffalo Bills have just announced their training camp coaching interns. And one of the interns for the Bills for training camp coming up is a lady by the name of Phoebe Schechter. She's a Great Britain's women's team player. She plays also for the men's Staffordshire team. She's a coach for men's and women's football for the Staffordshire Surge. So Phoebe Schechter has gone from playing women's football for Great Britain to coaching the Buffalo Bills. What a story.
It is an amazing story, and I think it's a really cool thing, and I congratulate the Bills on going that direction.
Let's move on to a couple of other bits of news from around the NFL as we give our congratulations to Phoebe. It really is tremendous. Tremendous opportunity for her and for the Great Britain's women's program. Still no opportunity for Colin Kaepernick, Jeff. The Seattle Seahawks signed Austin Davis instead of Kaepernick. I mean, that's a damning indictment, isn't it? As these OTAs roll on and we get close to training camp, you've got to wonder where that opportunity is going to come for Colin Kaepernick.
Well, you know what, Neil? It may come with us because we have his rights.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't get an NFL opportunity and wants to play, then maybe it's up with us. So, but, you know, when you look at this thing, it's really getting interesting to me now because I don't know if you caught there was a media guy who rated, I think it was 8 or 10 backups better than Colin Kaepernick. And we're talking about guys like Geno Smith.
Mm.
So, you know, I just don't see it. Somehow, some way, there's got to be a place for this guy in the league. He has limitations. Yes, he does. But there are very few quarterbacks in the league that don't have limitations. And, it's really surprising to me that he hasn't been able to find a place yet.
Jeff, do you remember that time when I was connecting the dots when we were on our Inside the Huddle tour and I connecting all the dots to how we were going to get the London Raiders as our franchise? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
All right, so I've been connecting some dots here. Right? I've been working all of this out because you're the newly appointed defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, so your club owns the rights to Colin Kaepernick, Robert Griffin III, and Johnny Manziel. If your defense is facing off against any of those three in practice, you, my son, are heading to the NFL because you're going to look good. And I can say that and you can't.
Yes. To pick up the block field goal. Yeah, to score it on the last play of the game to beat them. I mean, Will, had a tremendous career. It was really well thought of by the Ravens. him to come up and continue to play while he serves his suspension in the NFL. And then Justin Rogers, who's played 26 games, I think it was, over three seasons with the Redskins. So for guys that want to continue to play, and you know, whether it's with the mind of going back to the NFL or just they want to continue to play, this league has historically provided an opportunity. Ricky Williams is another story. You know,
yeah,
the guy that came up here and played during the suspension.
Well, Jeff, I'm joking with you because it is difficult for you if those guys walk through your door and you're then coaching them on your team. So I don't expect you to comment, but somebody like Johnny Manziel, who there's all this kind of concern, well, you know, is he going to buckle down? Is he going to be an every week starter? Can he be a leader? I think the best thing for Johnny Manziel now is to knock on the door of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and say, well, let me show you what I can do in a football environment, because otherwise we're just never going to know again. We're never going to know whether he can be what people thought he was going to be when he was a first round draft pick.
I think that's true for all three of those guys. Mm. And again, we talk about historical perspective. When Warren Moon came out of the University of Washington and wasn't drafted, he had two choices. He could either, you know, try and make it as a street free agent in the NFL or come up here and get on the field and show he could play. And he turned that opportunity in Edmonton into a long, you know, NFL career with the Oilers and the Vikings. And you know, he was one of the better players in the history of the league at that position. And a guy like Doug Flutie, who who wins the Heisman Trophy, but didn't fit the NFL, I guess didn't fit the NFL profile, but came up here, showed he could win, showed he could play, and then went back down and finished his career in both Buffalo and San Diego. So I think for all three of those guys, coming up and playing up here would erase some of the questions, because each of them have questions. You know, with Manziel, it's as you said, is he serious about football? Will he dedicate himself? Will he do the things, you know, it takes? Robert Griffin III, I think it comes down to, you know, showing that he's over that knee injury.
Yep.
And then, you know, again with Colin, it's just it's the same thing. He's got a label on him, and he, you know, this could be an opportunity for him to get up and you know, take that off of him.
All right, let's look at a couple of other little transaction pieces, then we'll hear from Ross Tucker and get into our state of the franchise as well. Jeff, when we did state of the franchise with the New York Jets, and we talked about a 5-11 team from a year ago, I think we sort of alluded to the fact that they may not yet have hit rock bottom. And this offseason must just have Jets fans scratching their heads. And I wonder if you can take us inside the locker room and suggest what Jets players are thinking, because Darrell Revis has gone, Nick Mangold has gone, Brandon Marshall has gone, now David Harris and Eric Decker are heading out the door as well. This is, obviously there's a financial impact to getting rid of all of those players, but it, to me, looking at it from the outside, it's like the Jets are saying, if you can't help us in 5 years' time, then we're going to clear the decks and we're going to start again, because there's players that David Harris can still play at linebacker. I'm sure when Eric Decker is healthy, he's going to find a home and be productive. Okay, no one's knocking down Darrell Revis' door, but Nick Mangold can still be a productive center, and Brandon Marshall is going to play well, I think, for the New York Giants. This must have Jets fans very, very worried about the coming season.
Well, you know, Neil, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I think it's more far-reaching even than the Jets. Because Bill Polian, you know, the ex-Colts general manager, made a statement last week about the Browns tanking. And tanking is a term that's used for basically losing on purpose so that you get a better, you know, draft position. You have more free agent money available to you because you slash, you know, you could sign guys that you could sign guys because you have enough money, but you choose to go a cheaper route for an unproven player, which happened in their kicking game. And I think that's a really, really, really strong statement when you come out and accuse an organization of basically trying to lose so that they, you know, look for their future. I think with the Jets, this has got to be really, really tough on Todd Bowles. And you know, last week after they released Harris, he was 40 minutes late for a scheduled press conference, and there was an awful lot of speculation and talk about the fact that, you know, he is what's his future. I mean, he's got
a hot seat already, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you look at how they've stripped that roster of so many players. Now, they're named guys, too. I mean, there are some, I think, were probably more football decisions than economic decisions. I think Rivas was one of them.
Yep.
But you look at it, and as I agree with you, you know, you talk about Marshall, you talk about Decker, you talk about Mangold. Those are guys that still have value. Now, they may not have the value based on the number, but this when you slash and burn like this, when you have basically a fire sale of players like this, it leads you to wonder what the long-term ramification is for the Jets organization. Is Woody Johnson now basically saying, we're going to just give up this season, get a better draft position, and then, you know, we'll start all over again in a complete rebuild, which McCagnan and Todd Bowles, that's got to be very concerning to them.
Jeff, you're right to suggest that Bill Polian's statements are very incendiary and very strong, because I think whenever I've sort of talked to players, and I know from asking you late in the season when we sat together in Sky, there's almost this, well, there's just no way that teams tank games. This game is too physical, too demanding, and too tough on the body to just tank games. But I mean, there's a respected general manager suggesting that has happened in the past, and you know, these releases by the Jets make you wonder about the future. But I guess that would be a management thing, wouldn't it? Because the players in the locker room, Jeff, if you're the quarterback of the Jets, you're not going to tank games so they can get a decent quarterback with the first overall pick.
No, and you know what, the guys that are playing, there ain't nobody playing to lose. Just telling you that right now.
Yeah.
It's too competitive a game. It's too physical a game. And the same thing with the coaches. You know, I think it can happen at the management level. And, Neil, in the NHL, in the National Hockey League, it's just a fact of life. I mean, 2 years ago, I watched it happen in Buffalo, where they basically just played a bunch of young kids in the organization because they wanted a better draft position, and they were open about it. It was actually to the point where in the media they were having a countdown at the end of the season. If we lose these last three, then we know we have a better shot at Connor McDavid or whoever the guy was that they wanted. So in other sports, it's been a kind of it's been historical. In baseball, they sell off at the trade deadline or free agent deadline, they sell off their top players if they don't feel like they're going to, you know, have a chance to win the championship, to get access to young players. So I think it's starting to creep into the NFL now, where an organization like Cleveland would look at that and say, okay, what's our best strategy? Is it to go out and sign up guys that are, you know, overpriced veterans that might get us, you know, four or five wins, or is it to bite the bullet on this season, go with the young kids, give them the experience, and have more cap space when we go into free agency and a better draft position. So that's, again, I don't know if you can call that tanking, but I think it's really more of a, you know, organizational strategy for the future.
One of the other transactions, Jeff, our podcast last week got dated very quickly because we were talking about Jeremy Maclin being a potential key part of the Kansas City Chiefs passing game. He is gone, released on Friday night. And Alex Smith, the quarterback, was kind of caught unawares. Even he was surprised by this move. And you know, this one, again, I think there must be a business element to this. They're trying to save that $10 million that would have been due to Jeremy Maclin this coming season. That's obviously still got to be spread out to some degree over the salary cap. But it doesn't make a lot of sense, Jeff, when they don't have huge numbers of receivers in Kansas City.
Well, yeah, it's a head scratcher because here's a guy that has a lot of game left and gives them the thing that, you know, gives them that element that they've missed so much. Now, again, you don't know inside the organization how they look at, you know, the guys that they've got in OTAs and mini camps right now. Somebody might be tearing it up and they just say, we feel like we can make this move, save ourselves the $10 million and, you know, move forward. So it's always, you know, it's really an amazing dynamic because you're always thinking, as coaches and players, you're in the moment. You're in this season, this game, this you know, practice. But from a management standpoint, you have to constantly be looking at your future. guy like Patrick Mahomes. They're not drafting him for this year. They're drafting him for what he can be 2, 3, 4 years down the line. Good organizations that are stocked with talented players can make those kinds of decisions. The Patriots have been historic with it.
Right.
And, you know, so I do understand it, you know, from a management perspective, from an organizational perspective, but for fans, certainly it's confusing sometimes.
All right, let's move on and get to the interview I conducted a couple of days ago with Ross Tucker. He's the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He played in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns, the Washington Redskins, Buffalo Bills, Dallas Cowboys, and New England Patriots. He always has a great perspective on what's going on around the league. So let's have a listen to my chat with Ross Tucker. Okay, I'm joined now on the Inside the Huddle podcast by an old friend of the show, a man who played 7 years in the NFL, played for the Washington Redskins, Dallas Cowboys, Buffalo Bills, New England Patriots, and the Cleveland Browns, former offensive lineman Ross Tucker. Ross, how are you, my friend?
Neil, I am fantastic, although I have a little bit of a bone to pick with you.
Oh, go on.
I was looking at your Twitter handle, your Twitter feed, and in fact, you and I were communicating initially via direct message, and I realized that your Twitter picture, not the one with you in Montana, you know, which is like your photo, but then the one you have at your actual, as your background, when someone actually goes to your page.
Yeah.
It is from when you and I emceed the event at Trafalgar Square, whatever year that was, 2011, 2012,
2012.
Whatever that was. And I'm looking at it, and I see Neil Reynolds, Tom Brady, Gronkowski, Welker, Belichick, Robert Kraft, and I just see the right arm of what appears to be a stunningly handsome man. But all I can see is the right arm because whoever that stunningly handsome man is cut off by the picture.
It's just one of those unfortunate edits, and I can share your pain because I'll give you a little story. We've just... The NFL UK have just moved into magnificent new offices in Leicester Square in the heart of London. And they've got around the walls of the office, they've got the kind of story of the last 10 years with all the games that have been played here in the UK and how the game has developed. And I almost made one of the pictures. There's an event that I hosted at Nike Town with Jackie Slater, the Rams' great offensive lineman, Marshall Faulk, and they're both in this shot. And then you can just see my right knee. They've clearly edited me out. So I'm feeling your pain. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to do much about it, but I'm feeling it. But I'm feeling it anyway.
Got it. Well, yeah. And honestly, I don't know if there is anything you can do about it because we're too far away. But it's just funny because we were DMing each other. I looked and I was like,
hey.
Oh, that's a cool picture. Oh, that picture's what I did there. Oh, there's my right arm right there. It was just something funny I wanted to bust your chops about.
All right, so tell me about and tell our listeners. I mean, I've been a longtime fan of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, but you have a growing empire of podcasts. What ones are in the Ross Tucker family now, Ross?
Yeah, you know what? I'm sure, Neil, that a bunch of the people that listen to you and listen to this podcast already get a chance to listen to some of my podcasts, but the Ross Tucker Football Podcast is the flagship one. You know, the idea is, you know, to have, you get a player's perspective on everything that's going on in the NFL. So it's 3 times a week in the off season. It's daily during the season.
Mm.
So we can get you your daily fill of NFL football. And then in terms of some of the other things that are really popular around the game of NFL football, a lot of people like to place wagers on games, like the gamble. We've got one of those, the Even Money Podcast with a Las Vegas handicapper. Obviously, fantasy football is huge, so we have the Fantasy Feast Podcast with Evan Silva of RotoWorld.com, who I think is the best fantasy guy out there. And then even if you're into evaluating players and scouting players and college football at all, but even just the evaluation process, we have the College Draft Podcast with Fran Duffy. And then if you really like The business side of it, I'm not even on this one, but you can dig deep into the business side of things with Andrew Brandt on the Business of Sports podcast. So the idea is, you know, to kind of specialize in the four major offshoots of NFL football that people are really into these days. Business, the draft, evaluating players, fantasy, and gambling. In addition to, you know, my namesake podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, just making sure everybody knows what they need to know and gets a unique perspective on.
All right, that's the world's longest ever plug. So we're going to make you earn your corn now, Ross. We're going to talk a little bit of football. Let's just start on the off season, because generally we always pay so much attention to quarterbacks, but here we are in an off season where there was no home found for Jay Cutler, and he heads to the booth to become a commentator for Fox. We've now seen Seattle take Austin Davis over Colin Kaepernick, which we know that there's been issues with Colin Kaepernick on and off the field for certainly the last 12 months. I mean, they say it's a quarterback-driven and a quarterback-hungry league, Ross. Are you surprised that there's no place for either of those two guys to begin with?
A little bit, but I think when you actually dig deep into it, it makes more sense, mm-hmm. right? Like, I always say this for both Cutler and Kaepernick. I say, give me the team and give me the dollar amount, right? So there's not that many good fits for Jay Cutler, because I think what he's proven over time is that he's about a 500 quarterback,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So and he's in his mid-30s now. So if you are the Cleveland Browns, you're not really ready to win this year. You're trying to build something for the future. Is Jay Cutler really a guy that you want to build around? The answer's probably not. I mean, why do you want to pay him a bunch of money to come in and take reps from you finding out if young guys like Kessler and Kaiser have what it takes to be your long-term answer? Everybody's trying to find their long-term answers. So then when you look at these teams, they fit into a couple categories. Either you think you have your long-term answer, or you're trying to find your long-term answer. And quite frankly, Jay Cutler doesn't fit any of those anymore. You know, he's not the guy that you think is your long-term answer, and he's not a guy that's going to help you find your long-term answer. And I think Colin Kaepernick is really in the same boat. And so, you know, any uproar there is about Kaepernick not having a job yet, I don't understand why there isn't as much of an uproar about Jay Cutler, who certainly, you know, has been a more established quarterback recently, I think, than Kaepernick. And then, you know, Neil, there's no secret that with what comes along with signing Colin Kaepernick, I think a lot of teams have just decided it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, because we saw what John Mara, the Giants owner, said. And right or wrong, right? Everybody has their feelings about Kaepernick's protest, and probably more specifically their feelings about the manner in which Kaepernick protested. And obviously there's a large percentage of fans for a bunch of teams that really don't care for it. They really have a problem with it. They thought it was disrespectful. And whether you agree with them or not, you have to acknowledge that those people exist. So then you have to decide, okay, we need a backup quarterback, or we're looking for a backup quarterback. Is it worth it to pay Kaepernick? I'm sure he's going to want at least a few million bucks.
Yeah.
And to have a bunch of your paying customers be upset with you and potentially, you know, turn you off, not come to games, et cetera. And also, Neil, if you look at it, a bunch of teams already have their backup quarterback.
Right.
So, again, I would say to you or anybody else, tell me the team and tell me the dollar amount that you're willing to pay, and then let's talk about it from both sides.
So I guess, I mean, we always look for the headlines as reporters who cover the NFL, and we look at Cutler as a, you know, somebody who looked like he was tough to get along with and had that bad body language and all of that. And Kaepernick, the first thing we go to is the politics of it. But I guess what you're sort of alluding to there is that Cutler is what he is and is probably too far into his career to change. And Kaepernick on the field has regressed since being in the Super Bowl. Is that fair?
Well, again, he fits the criteria, Neil, where I don't think anybody thinks he's the long-term answer.
Right.
Or that he's going to be the long-term answer. Mm. So if you look at every team, they either have a guy that they think is the long-term answer, or they're trying to see, they think it's Carson Wentz. Or in L.A., they're trying to see if it is Jared Goff. I mean, that's what everybody's looking for. They're not looking for a guy that has proven over the last few years that he's not a team's long-term answer at the position. Mm-hmm. Like Jay Cutler, like Colin Kaepernick, like Ryan Fitzpatrick, for that matter. I mean, there's other guys that have proven they're not the long-term answer for your team. And so every team, that's like the Jets, right?
Yep.
The only reason why they got Josh McCown is because they think that he can do the best job of trying to help Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg show whether or not they can be the long-term
right.
answer. That's why he's there, you know? And if he, not because they think he's a better player necessarily than Cutler or Kaepernick, but because they think McCown will do the best job of trying to help Hackenberg and Petty show if they can be the long-term answer.
It's a relatively quiet time, Ross, for the NFL. I mean, I know teams are working their way through the OTAs, the organized team activities. So let's focus on those, because there have been some headlines to come out of those, and it's great to get a player's perspective. You're in the locker room for 7 years. We hear that these are, at the moment, voluntary mini camps. I mean, the mandatory ones come up in mid-June, and every team has a mandatory one. These are voluntary, but are they really voluntary? And Odell Beckham Jr. has made some headlines for not being there with the New York Giants. Is this a storm in the teacup, or do players who are there, you know, begrudge those that aren't? Maybe talk us through that from an ex-player's point of view.
Yeah, I think usually players are much more self-centered, I think, than people realize, meaning, you know, they really care about, at least I did, really care about myself and my performance and getting better every day, and who was there or wasn't there didn't really affect me. But that's also the perspective of a guy that was essentially a journeyman, right? A journeyman lineman. So the guys that are stars, you know, for the Giants, for example, Eli Manning, as well as Landon Collins, guys like that, there's no doubt in my mind that part of them is thinking, I'm here with my teammates trying to get better for next year. Why isn't Odell here? And now, it's funny that you say, do guys begrudge him? If it's a contract thing, Neil, they really don't.
Right.
You know, if it's a contract thing, they really kind of understand it doesn't bother them. They get it. That's business. But if the guy's not there just to not be there, just because it's voluntary, then that might rub some guys the wrong way. Because the reality is, Neil, I mean, life is voluntary, you know? I mean, there's a lot of things about your job and my job that aren't mandatory, my jobs, I should say, that aren't mandatory, but we do them anyway.
I mean,
you interact with some of your listeners via social media and stuff. I do the same. That's not mandatory, but that's good for business, and it's good to ingratiate yourself with your listeners, and it's good to have that back and forth a little bit. That's voluntary, but it's still a good thing to do, which is why I would say for Odell Beckham Jr., anybody that's skipping OTAs, it's still a good thing to do. Now, if you're Aaron Donald and it's a contract thing,
sure,
and you don't want to take the injury risk, I totally, totally get that. And you know, by the way, Neil, that might be the case with Odell Beckham Jr.
Mm.
He said no comment, you know, about whether he'd show up. So maybe this is contract related for him.
Do you think we'll see it when the next round of the CBA is done? We'll just do away with that term voluntary, because it feels like players almost feel like they have to be there.
I think that it's something that, you know, the NFL likes it, because even though it's voluntary, there is that feeling of obligation. So I do think it'll be a topic that will come up. But like a lot of these things, Neil, there's about a million things that they'll discuss.
Right.
But is it something that either the NFL or the NFLPA feels strongly enough changing in order to actually make it happen? Because if you feel strongly enough to change it one way or the other, whereas if the NFL makes it mandatory or whatever, then you have to give something up on the back end. And my guess is the NFL is okay enough with the fact that this many guys show up, and the NFLPA is not willing to just give up something that's voluntary.
Right. A couple more, Ross, before we let you go. You mentioned the B word a couple of times there, business, the business of football, and we saw it can be a cold business in the last couple of days with Jeremy Maclin being released by the Kansas City Chiefs. It caught Alex Smith, the quarterback, unaware. He didn't see that one coming. Tell us about that side of the game, and when you were with all those different teams, was there ever one that really kind of shocked you where you just didn't see it coming, where they let you go?
Well, yes, for me, definitely. I can remember 2006, I started the last three preseason games for the Browns. I thought I'd either start the opener or at worst be backup, and they cut me. I was shocked, but it turned out they were trading for Hank Fraley. But I can remember even going back to my rookie year, Neil. The second game we played was a Monday night game at Green Bay. Tuesday's the players' day off. I show up for work on Wednesday, and Jeff George isn't there.
Wow.
And I come to find out, and by the way, Jeff George is our starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And I come to find out that they cut our starting quarterback after the second game, a day after the second game, which, I mean, I'm coming from high school football and college football. I was like, wow, you just cut a starting quarterback like that? This is crazy. That was one of my first introductions into pro football and the craziness around it.
Yeah, if they're going to cut the starting quarterback, then anyone's fair game, right?
Exactly.
All right. One more, Ross. We've got four games in London this year. Continues to grow on this side of the pond. You are fortunate to have listeners of your podcast from these shores. You've been over and covered events over here in the UK. That talk of a London franchise isn't going away. In fact, it seems to be kind of strengthening. What's your thoughts from that side of the pond?
I think it's inevitable. Now, I don't know what the timeline is for it, Neil, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but I just think if you look at it from the NFL's perspective and you look at it from a business perspective, you know, they're getting close to kind of tapping out the American market. I mean, the ratings went down a little bit for the first time. I mean, everybody knows about the NFL in America. I think that they really feel like the greatest opportunity for growth is overseas. I just wonder whether it'll be, Neil, the London actually getting a team, or the NFL just playing an 8-game slate over there.
Right.
That's what I wonder. But you guys have done such a great job with the games that you have gotten. And who knows, maybe I'll get a chance to come back over this year. That'd be awesome. And then you look at the growth and what's been there. Even just my listeners and just seeing their knowledge and how into it they are, I think that you'll continue to see more and more games over there. And then I don't know. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they actually pull the trigger and put a franchise over it. I think that might have a lot to do with the health of the 32 franchises back in the States and what's going on with stadium deals and attendance and stuff like that. Because I don't think anybody thought Las Vegas would get a team. So it could happen sooner than you think based on what happens over in the States.
All right. And if we get you back over, I've always got a spot on stage for you, but I'll just ask the cameraman to just widen that shot just a little bit. Just widen the lens.
Yes. Please do, so I can get. I need to get those impressions on Neil's Twitter handle. That's big for me.
Mate, so, if you're trying,
that'd be awesome. I got to get you, by the way, back on the on one of my podcasts soon.
Excellent. I look forward to it. And Ross, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to try and get you on a few times during the season for sure. You'll be up for that?
That would be great. I'd love to.
All right, so one more time, Ross, where's the best place to just go and get all the information of all the different podcasts? Have you got a website address for the people?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can always just go to rosstucker.com. We just redid it. Or however you listen to this podcast, the odds are you can listen to all of mine, like the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the exact same way.
All right, good man. Thanks for joining us, Ross.
Absolutely. Take care, Neil.
All right, Jeff, let's move on to the state of the franchise then. Let's do the Dallas Cowboys first. We're getting to the business end of the teams here now. And the Dallas Cowboys, they went 13-3 during the regular season. They lost to Green Bay at home in the divisional round of the playoffs, a game that they fell behind early in and then came back and then lost to a late field goal. Offense was fifth in the NFL with those two rookies, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, leading the way. Second in rushing, 23rd in passing. Defense was 14th, first against the run. They only allowed 83.5 yards per game on the ground and 26th against the pass. Jeff, we normally start with the offense, but let's start with that defense because they lost seven players in the offseason to free agency, including the entire secondary. Now, I know they've restocked via the draft, but that was a lot to lose in one go for the Dallas Cowboys. Are they able to cope on that side of the ball?
Well, that's going to be the big question, you know, and that's been the question in Dallas really for the last 4 or 5 years. Mm. Rod Marinelli's done a great job with what he's had, access to. They have taken some chances on some character guys on defense, and it didn't work out for them. They have, they have lost guys in free agency. I think this was really interesting as you watched the offseason. They need a pass rusher desperately. Mm. And Taco Charlton, the guy they took with their first pick out of Michigan, can be that guy. I mean, he's long, he's athletic, he's all those things, but he's just a rookie. So this football team, you mentioned those stats, Neil. I think you got to really dig even deeper than those stats to, again, they're going to be a little bit higher rated on defense than maybe they should be in terms of you look at them as 14th or 15th in the league.
Right.
Because that offense grinds the ball so long.
Yes.
They don't play, To me, the stat for the Cowboys would be yardage per play, and the fact they don't give up that much rushing yards basically has to do with teams are behind most of the time against them, and they're, so it's you're facing different, different issues. So I think the questions for the Cowboys are going to be, can this defense be good enough? Because the offense is certainly going to score points. And like you say, you're putting an awful lot now on the plate of guys like Charlton and Uzi, the kid out of Colorado that they took. Orlando Scandrick. You look at the roster on defense, and you look at Sean Lee, Orlando Scandrick, Nolan Carroll, and then beyond that, it's a bunch of guys. I mean, it's just they're not guys that you're going to go, wow, that's a player.
No, and DeMarcus Lawrence is claiming he's going to win the NFL sack title. He had one sack last year. So I mean, there's a lot of question marks on that side of the ball. On offense, Jeff, let's start with the offensive line, which is really the foundation of everything this team has done for the last few years. This is a unit that lost Doug Free and Ronald Leary, but they've still got Lyle Collins to slot back in. And is this where they start everything, isn't it, with this strong offensive line?
Yeah, And everybody talks about the fact that nobody has three good corners in the NFL.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is most teams don't have three good offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. If you have three that are really good players and two that are okay, you got a great chance. This is a really talented bunch. I mean, this is a bunch that you look at them and they have spent money and they have, put draft picks. You got three first-round draft picks on that offensive line and a guy in Lyle Collins that – really, they got – it was a bargain basement deal because of some off-field issues the kids reportedly had, and the Cowboys were able to get him. He's a first-round talent. So you're talking about those guys. There's some questions at right tackle, but in my mind, I don't know if there's an offensive line in the National Football League that's better than the Dallas Cowboys.
And operating behind that line is Dak Prescott. He went to the Pro Bowl as a first-year starter. This fourth rounder who kind of came off the bench in preseason when Tony Romo got hurt, and then we had the whole, do you go back to Tony? Do you stick with Dak? That was a conversation that rumbled for the first three quarters of the 2016 season. Then Tony Romo kind of steps up to the podium and says, this is Dak's team. Jeff, what did you see in Dak Prescott? And also now, what's the dynamic? Because the Tony Romo safety net has been taken away, is that a good thing because all that Dak and Tony conversation goes away? Is there any extra pressure on Dak Prescott because the decks have been cleared and he is the man? Or, I mean, where do we stand with Dak Prescott and all of that kind of stuff?
You know, this is one we could spend the whole podcast on.
Right.
Because this kid is such a, was, you know, you're talking about a fourth rounder comes in and plays the way he did. Now, I've known Dak since he was a high school player in Louisiana. He's been the same guy all the way through. He is one of those guys that kind of flies under the radar. But you look at his pedigree, and the biggest thing that you judge quarterbacks on is winning. Mm. And he, you know, won as a high school player without much around him. He went to Mississippi State, which is a lower level, lower tier team in the SEC, and he got them to the, you know, to be a really a legitimate SEC power while he was there. And then he comes to the Cowboys and does way beyond what people anticipated he would be. Now, I think the interesting thing with Dak is we talk all the time about sophomore slumps, guys that play great as rookies and then can't, you know, they have a kind of a lull in their second year. I don't see that happening with him, Neil, because one of the best things about Dak is the kind of guy he is, the kind of worker he is, the kind of committed to football guy he is. You haven't seen anything in the media, no controversy. No,
disappeared off the map. Stuff.
He has been what you want your quarterback to be, and I think he's primed now to really take a step because, you know, Jason and his coaching staff, I think, did a good, Scott Linehan, the offensive coordinator, did a great job of managing him over the course of the season and giving him a little bit and then a little bit more and then a little bit more and then a little bit more. And like I say, now with a whole season, off season of OTAs and coaching sessions and quarterback school, all of those things, I think this kid is primed to really take a step.
Jeff, did you like Dak in high school? Or could he be our quarterback for the all-Jeff team?
No, I'm going to tell you something. He was one that he was good. I mean, he was a really, really good player. It was kind of, it was really, it's an interesting story, Neil. He had one SEC offer, and that was Mississippi State. And we almost got him because he didn't want to go very far away from home. We were in Dallas, and so it was about 2 hours away because his mother had cancer. And, you know, it was one that I wish we'd have had because I think he would have been fun to watch in the run and shoot.
Jeff, I love the story about Dak Prescott last year, and I think it was through his college as well, but he won't throw the ball to a defender in practice, even when he's warming up. And sometimes the guys in Dallas were trying to get him to even just underhand it to him. So throw us a ball, Dak, and he won't. He'll walk over and hand it to them. He's just literally like, I'm not throwing you an interception, no matter how much it doesn't count for anything. And it's just a funny little story, but he is... he played with so much poise, didn't he, Jeff, as well?
Yeah, and I think what you just said, Neil, is really a look into him, you know, just how focused he is and how committed he is to, you know, protecting the football. And he understands, you know, the guys that have that kind of obsession with the game, you know, you love those guys. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think this kid, if he stays healthy, will be a really, really fine NFL quarterback.
Still has Jason Witten at tight end, who's defying father time. Cole Beasley in the slot, Terrence Williams. I guess it's going to help him, Jeff, if he's got a fully healthy Dez Bryant, which we haven't really seen in the NFL for a couple of years now.
Yeah, if Dez can get over the injury thing, you know, you're talking about one of the elite guys in the league, a guy that is really, really, really difficult to defend one-on-one. He's so big, he's so strong. You know, Beasley is, to me, the key of it because if you're going to double, if you're going to double outside, he is there are very few slot corners in the NFL that can stay with him. He's got incredible short burst quickness, not long speed, but incredible short burst quickness. I think he and Edelman really are the two best inside receivers in the league for my money. Witten is an interesting guy. Now, he, like you say, you can see in his play, Neil, that he's lost a step. He's not the Jason Witten that he was 8 years ago. But particularly in the red zone, he is still a threat.
The one man we haven't spoken about on this offense was one of their star players, of course, Ezekiel Elliott. He led the NFL with 1,631 rushing yards last year, 15 touchdowns. He also caught passes worth 363 yards out of the backfield. Jeff, there's a lot of that kind of easy talk to say, well, he's running behind the best line in the NFL, and there is. I mean, there is examples of that where I remember a long touchdown he ripped off against the Cincinnati Bengals. You could have actually driven a car through the hole that was created for him up front. But it should also be noted that this guy led the NFL with 938 rushing yards after contact. So it's not like he was just dancing through wide open holes all year long either.
No, I don't minimize the because that great offensive line blocks as well as they do. Don't minimize what this guy means to their running game, because to me, when you look at a player coming out of college, especially a running back, it's a lot of times about the marriage of the system and the player's talents. He is exactly what they need in that running game. And so that unique combination of athlete and system really gave this kid a chance to showcase his skills. You look at his whole body of work, Neil. You look at everything that you ask a running back to do. He's one of the unique ones in the league that can play all three downs. Mm. I mean, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. His pass protection is better than, I wouldn't say he's great, but he's better than average, certainly. And obviously running the football. He's going to take some pounding, though, because he is he's not a guy like Franco Harris is going to run out of bounds on the sideline to save his body a little bit. He is a physical runner, and that statistic that you mentioned about yards after contact, that's an indication of that. So, again, as long as he's healthy, this is a really, really good offense in Dallas.
As we finish off with the Cowboys and look to give them an arrow up, down, or sideways, Jeff, I did a Twitter Q&A yesterday for NFL UK, and I actually said I felt like the Cowboys would come back to the pack a little bit because I'm worried about so many defensive defections. And I got pulled up very quickly by a couple of Cowboys fans on Twitter. And, well, we addressed all of those issues in the draft. My worry is that until they've been on the field and proven they can do it week in and week out in the NFL, then they are what they are, which is rookie draft picks who, normally 50% of all rookies pan out. So you don't know if you're going to get all of those guys. As talented as this team is on offense, I feel like they've gone backwards a little bit because of the defense. What's your take on where the Cowboys are in terms of arrow up, down, or sideways?
Well, I'm going to say arrow up, Neil, and I say that because you're looking at a healthy Dez.
Yes.
You're looking at Dak a year further along.
Yep.
You're looking at Ezekiel Elliott, now one of the maybe premier back in the league, and that great offensive line. And I think that's enough to drag the defense with them as the defense kind of gains an identity and, they get Charlton involved. You are very correct, however, when you say that it is an unbelievably big step, even for a first-rounder like Charlton or a guy like Owusu who's really, really athletic, to go in and play as a rookie. You can't depend on rookies to be your star players. Mm. It's great when it happens, but it's an unusual situation. I just think Rod Marinelli will take what he's got and make the best of it.
It did feel right, Jeff, to have the Cowboys in the mix of big games every week last year. I mean, it's just one of those franchises, isn't it? It just felt right. It looks right to have the Dallas Cowboys as competitive as they were.
Yeah, I think, they're one of the marquee franchises in the league. They've been America's team since way back in the Tom Landry days. Mm. There's something special about that, blue star on that silver helmet. There's so much mystique there, and Jerry Jones is always going to keep him in the media because he can't stay out of it. So, they are really an interesting organization because there's always some sort of drama going on, at Valley Ranch. But again, they're also a very, very talented football team.
All right, talking of talent and drama, let's look back at the 2016 Green Bay Packers and ahead to their chances in 2017. So last year, offense was ranked 8th in the NFL, 20th in rushing, 7th in passing. Defense was 22nd, 8th against the run, 31st against the pass. They got absolutely shredded by Matt Ryan and Julio Jones in the NFC Championship game, which ended a 10-6 season. This was a team that had the sky falling down on them, Jeff, in November. They were suffering a four-game losing streak. There were rumblings of discontent between head coach Mike McCarthy and quarterback Aaron Rodgers. They looked awful. They looked terrible. Then all of a sudden, they didn't. Aaron Rodgers got red hot. He played at a ridiculous level down the stretch. And they just ran into a buzzsaw with the Atlanta Falcons. So this is a team that's quite hard to figure out.
Well, you know, quite honestly, Neil, you know how we talk about a Super Bowl window for
yep.
a team?
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that's, you know, had that Super Bowl window open for, you know, the last 5 years probably. But, you know, this is a team to me that has to take, if they're going to win a Super Bowl, they got to take that step now. Because you're starting to now get some age on Aaron Rodgers. You're starting to get some age on Clay Matthews. You look at some of these guys that Morgan Burnett now, and they're, some of their key players are starting to have some age on them. This is a team that needs to do it now. And, you know, as long as 12 is your quarterback, you got a great chance.
Jeff, that's a great starting point, because one of the frustrations, I think, of Green Bay Packers fans, and certainly one of the accusations leveled at this team, is that you have, arguably, in terms of throwing the football, the best pure passer in NFL history. Aaron Rodgers is the highest rated quarterback in NFL history when it comes to the stats and the numbers. How he throws the ball is ridiculous. But the fact remains, he's won one Super Bowl, and Ted Thompson, the general manager, has a stubbornness when it comes to free agency. Now, we know that there's hits and misses in free agency, Jeff, and there's you know, sometimes that's an expensive way to build a roster and not always the right way, but I think certain teams have shown that you can have both. You know, the Falcons last year brought Alex Mack in at center and it made a difference to their team. I mean, just as a contrast, look at what the New England Patriots have done this offseason in terms of bringing in veteran help. They've tried to load the cannon for Tom Brady. And I think one of the things that you could level against the Packers is that they haven't always been active in free agency. And that includes protecting their own players. They've allowed some to get out of the building.
Well, they have a philosophy of Teddy. You know, Teddy Thompson has a plan. You know, free agency is such a, it's such a trip to Vegas, because
right.
you just never know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look at like the Giants last year.
Yep.
They hit on three free agents on defense that changed the entire dynamic of their defense. When you look at the Packers in free agency, they are very selective and basically have done pretty well, because you look at a Julius Peppers, who they got in free agency from the Bears, came and gave them what, you know, he was a, I would say that's a win for you. Now, you look at this year, the big free agent signing is Martellus Bennett, who gives Aaron Rodgers something that he's not had for the last few years, which is elite-level tight end skills in the pass game. And Martellus is a better-than-average blocker in the run game.
Yeah, that was towards the end of last year when Jared Cook got healthy. The Packers' offense took off, even though his catches didn't really go through the roof. He opened up a lot of stuff in the offense. Let's start on the offensive line, Jeff, as I talked about letting people out of the building. They've lost center J.C. Tretter and guard T.J. Lang to free agency. This is kind of what I'm talking about, because when we see Aaron Rodgers frustrated, I remember a couple of years ago, that game where he was sacked 7 or 8 times on the road against the Arizona Cardinals. You know, I think pressure up the middle, and this is two interior linemen he's lost. It's at least going to be a concern. I understand the argument, and you're quite right. This is a Super Bowl caliber, Super Bowl challenging team whenever they've got number 12 under center, but there must be a few concerns about what's up front.
Well, I think when you look at the players, Neil, Brian Bulaga, the right tackle, is the only first round draft choice they have in the offensive line. They've got two college free agents. I'm talking about street free agents, guys mm-hmm. undrafted starting for them. And then Bakhtiari was a fourth rounder, and Corey Lindsey at center were fifth rounders. So it's not, they have not, you're right, invested draft picks and money in the offensive line. They've let Tretter and those guys go, who were really rotational players, backups, and again, with, I'm sure, the belief that they have guys who can step in and do what Tretter and those guys were asked to do at a much cheaper cost. So, you know, again, this offensive line doesn't have to be great.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
They just have to be good enough where they're not letting guys run free to the quarterback. If they can just get in people's way, 12 is going to make enough plays. You always wonder to me with the Packers about the running game, you know, the running game, because you're asking, you're talking about Ty Montgomery, who's really a receiver, playing running back.
Well, let's talk about him, Jeff, because last year, obviously, it was a developing story that they'd moved this guy from wide receiver to running back because Eddie Lacy's out, and it was almost like a necessity forced on the Packers. And now we've gone through an entire offseason. They didn't really go looking and shopping for a running back. They allowed Eddie Lacy to leave and become a Seattle Seahawk. So it looks like the switch is permanent for Ty Montgomery. And that's not something we see every day, is it, in the NFL? Guys switching positions like that.
No, and I heard an interview done with him last week, and he has committed himself to being a running back. Mm. Now, interestingly enough, he's going to continue to wear number 88 in the backfield. So, you know, but he has said that, you know, he recognizes that that's what's the best thing for the football team. Now, he's not a very big guy, Neil, and so how much pounding he's going to be able to take inside those tackles. I think the key thing for the Packers, when you look at their draft, was the Jamal Williams kid they took out of BYU in the fourth round.
Mm.
Because I think he has the ability to be a starter in the NFL. But you're talking about risk to reward. Mm. There is not a guy in that on that roster right now that you look at and say, that's a guy I want to hand the ball to when I got to get 3 yards and it's tough.
No, let's have a look at the passing game. You mentioned Martellus Bennett being brought on board as well. We've got Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams at wide receiver. Three very productive wideouts. And number 12, Jeff, I just said he's arguably the greatest thrower of the football in NFL history. Is that hyping him up too much? Where do you see Aaron Rodgers as one? Are we talking sort of one of the all-time greats here?
You know what? I think you and I have talked to enough players to make this statement. When you talk to players, I'm talking about NFL players. When you talk to NFL players, you talk about that position, the name that comes out right now, it's either Tom Brady or it's Aaron Rodgers every time. And a lot of the players that I've talked to say Rodgers is maybe a little more dangerous because he's a little bit more mobile. He's a guy that can make plays. Think about the play against Dallas in that last drive where he gets pushed out of the pocket.
Rolling to his left.
Throws a ball sidearm on the dime, 20 yards down the field for a critical first down. There are not very many guys in the game that can make that play. And so I think he certainly does have to stake his claim as one of the best.
It's funny, isn't it, Jeff? Because you defensive coordinators, you always talk about getting quarterbacks off their spot and get them rolling around and moving and running around. You don't want that with this guy.
No, and I think if you are defending him, one of the things you've got to understand is he is at his best when he improvises. Mm. You know, when you keep him in the pocket and you make him throw from the pocket, he's going to hurt you. There's no question about that. But how many times have we seen, Neil, where he gets out of the pocket and it's almost like there's some sort of, you know, connection, you know, psychological connection or mental connection with Jordy Nelson,
right.
And the next thing you know, it's a 60-yard touchdown pass. And, you know, it's just he is so dangerous, and they do such a great job with the improvisational part of his game. When, you know, they know where to go we call it scramble rules in coaching. You know, they have very finely defined scramble rules, and obviously they work on it because they know he's going to get out of the pocket and make plays. Again, that's one of the things that makes him so unique and tough to defend.
Defense was 22nd, Jeff, last year. Have they done enough to upgrade that side of the ball? And do they need to be? How good do they need to be?
Well, you know what? Again, you look at this team, and in some ways they're very similar to Dallas, right? You know, in that their offense is going to carry them. They're a team with an offensive identity. But you look at their players on defense, and you know, particularly when you start talking about inside linebacker, when you line up with Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez, you know, those are both guys that have limitations. Clay Matthews has been hurt by their lack of inside linebackers because he has had to go inside and play inside, and he's not nearly as effective or dangerous when he's playing inside than when he's on the edge, which is, you know, where he really picks in the secondary. That's been an area for him where they've got to get better. Kevin King, the kid out of Washington that they drafted in the second round, has dynamic ability. Josh Jones, again, another second rounder. They've invested now in that secondary. But I look at the front, and they kind of manufacture pressure with Dom Capers' scheme. It's not like you look and you say Kenny Clark and Christian Rengo and Mike Daniels. Oh boy, those guys are great pass rushers. Mm. But the scheme kind of manufactures pressure. Now in the back end, can you hold up?
All right, Jeff. As we finish off with the Packers, then are they about where they were last year? Are they improved? Have they taken a step back? And as we look big picture, are they a Super Bowl contender for you?
Well, I think that, I think as long as 12 is in the game, they got a chance to beat anybody on their schedule.
Yeah.
They've got to stay healthy. They're not a team with great depth. And, they've got to, for them, I think their path to the Super Bowl is really important. Mm. If they can get home field advantage through the playoffs, that's huge for them because it's so hard to win in that stadium, and it's really hard to win in that stadium when you get into December and January football. So I think that's critical for them. But I give them an arrow, sideways, mm-hmm. because in my mind, I don't see where the improvements have come. Obviously, we talked about Bennett, but I don't see it's the defense that's going to be the issue, I think.
All right. That's finished off the state of the franchise for this week. Next week, we'll finish that entire series with the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Atlanta Falcons, and the New England Patriots. Take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag. This one comes from Tom Strachan. It's for me, Jeff. He says, Neil, if you had to choose between Miami winning a Super Bowl or not getting booed at Wembley, which would it be? I didn't actually mind, really. I'd rather get the Super Bowl. I've got thick skin. I can take it. Bring it on.
Mr. Davis always said, Al Davis, the owner of the Raiders, said, it doesn't matter what they say about you, just as long as they spell your name right.
There you go. Exactly. And I think the British fans can spell boo. So I'm going to take the Super Bowl for the Miami Dolphins. And one last question comes from Claire the Bear. And she says, are you guys looking forward to seeing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Hard Knocks? I think it's a good franchise to look at behind the scenes. Jeff, the Hard Knocks program is always a fascinating watch. And I'm interested to see, because there was a lot of talk last year about how Jameis Winston has become a real leader of this team. I think they are a good team to focus on, and I'm interested to see what Jameis is like in the locker room.
Yeah, you know what? That show, Hard Knocks, is, in my mind, brilliant TV. I live that life, right? But even for me, I'm glued to it when it comes on. I love that inside look at the league and the players and the coaches in the league. And it's interesting, Neil. This is a team now. We're talking about the Bucks. This is a team, as we went through State of the Franchise, that said could make that big jump in their division. Mm. And I think it will be fascinating to watch the inside part of it, the interaction between the players, the interaction between the players and the coaches. As you said, Jameis Winston, is he now really the leader? Is he that guy that they craved since they drafted him out of Florida State? So a lot of great storylines that we'll be able to look at in Hard Knocks.
Jeff, just as we finish up quickly, do you want a training camp travel update?
Yeah, what's going on now?
Okay, so I got to the point where I had all my flights mapped out and realized that it's logistically possible to visit 8 teams in 8 days. I was going to start on the West Coast, go from the Rams to the Cardinals to the Vikings to the Browns, and then the rest of the teams down the East Coast. I reached out to the 8 teams. Impossible to get them all lined up. There's teams that are having scrimmages off-site on days that I want to see them. There are teams that are having days off for their players when I want to see them. So now the trip is still alive, but it makes no geographical sense because I think I'm going to start in Miami, go to Phoenix, to LA. Then I'm going to fly all the way over the top of Minneapolis to Cleveland, probably on a red eye. Then I'm going to fly back from Cleveland to Minneapolis and then back to the East Coast. So it's still possible, but it makes zero geographical sense now.
Well, somehow that's just what you would expect out of your travel agent.
Right.
I don't know who who that is, but you better fire him.
It was all going far too smoothly, but it's going to be a lot of fun, and I will promise to give you updates if I get it all lined up. I'll finally have a schedule of where I'm going, and then I'll let everyone know. But we're going to let you get off, Jeff, to preparations for your first preseason game. Good luck tonight.
Appreciate it. It's going to be fun.
All right, man. Until next week, say goodbye to the good folks.